We now begin a two-part epilogue to the book of Judges. Back at the beginning of this series, we found that the first two chapters of Judges, the prologue, outline some principles of God's dealings with man. For example, one of the main principles is, when people do what is right in their own eyes, they do what is wrong in God's eyes and suffer the consequences. Then the writer of Judges gave us some stories of various judges which show these principles in operation. Now, at the end of the book, we come to an epilogue which underlines the truth of these principles, emphasizing the theme again. The epilogue consists of two sets of two stories each, in which God reveals the inner life of the people of those days, so that we might know the deeper reasons for their sin and failure. These stories about idolatry, immorality, and lawlessness come at the end of the book, but probably took place in the early years of the judges, maybe during Othniel's time. Let's begin by looking at the first set of related stories. A disgraceful thief. Judges chapter 17, beginning with verse 1. Now there was a man from the mountains of Ephraim whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, "The 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you, and on which you put a curse, even saying it in my ears, here is the silver with me. I took it." And his mother said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my son." So when he had returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, "I had wholly dedicated the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son, to make a carved image and a molded image. Now therefore I will return it to you." Thus he returned the silver to his mother. Then his mother took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to the silversmith, and he made it into a carved image and a molded image, and they were in the house of Micah. The man Micah had a shrine, and made an ephod and household idols, and he consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Let's take a look at the mother's character. What do we learn about the mother here? She was superstitious. She put a curse on the stolen money. It was believed that a curse could be canceled by a blessing being pronounced by the same person. Therefore, her blessing on the son when he returned the money canceled this curse. She may have suspected her son of stealing the money because she had pronounced the curse in his ears, but she did not correct her son about his stealing. She was insincere. Although she says she had dedicated the whole amount to the Lord, when she got it back, she only gave 18% for that purpose. She herself was a thief. She was disobedient to God, or at least ignorant of his commands when she made her carved image. We have met some other mothers in Judges, women like Deborah, Jael, Samson's mother, and this mother is a far cry from the character of those ladies. Let's take a look at Micah's character. What do we learn here about Micah? First, he was a thief who stole from his own mother. Yes, he gave the money back, but apparently only because of his fear of the curse. He too was disobedient to God's laws. God's sanctuary was to be at a specified place, and Micah's home was not it. The tabernacle was at Shiloh, and Israel was to worship him there. Micah disregards this law and sets up a shrine at his own home, even though Shiloh was only a short distance from his house. Later in 1 Samuel chapter 1, we see a tremendous contrast to Micah's behavior when we read about Samuel's father, Elkanah, who went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. In Micah's case, he had the carved image his mother purchased, an ephod, a replica of the special vest worn by the high priest and used in determining God's will, plus household idols. This was all a direct disobedience of God's clear rules. In fact, according to Deuteronomy chapter 13, he should have been put to death. To make matters worse, he also made one of his sons to be priest, when only those of Aaron's family line had the right to be priests. To emphasize what's happening here, verse 6 injects the tragic theme of Judges again at this point. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Micah does what is right in his own eyes in two significant ways. First, he makes his own idols, and second, he sets up his own shrine. He reduces God to something he can control, which is the timeless essence of idolatry. and instead of worshiping the living God, he worships things that are simply extensions of himself. And we can do much the same thing. Even if we manage to avoid the idolatry of the toys of our materialistic age, we may still be like Micah by placing something or someone else in the central position of affection and attention in our lives, pushing God off to the side. In his religious practice, Micah pretended to be worshiping God, but he does so in the way Micah wanted, not on God's terms. Evidently, Micah decided it would be much more convenient to worship at home. Why make that tedious journey to Shiloh every year, transporting your sacrifices and so on, when you could just set up your own shrine right there at home with your own priest, handy to do the necessary whenever you need it? But our worship of the great Creator, Redeemer, God must be done on the terms He sets, not on our terms, not on the basis of what is most convenient or pleasurable to us. We don't attend worship services primarily to feel good or enjoy ourselves or even get blessed. Worship was well defined by William Temple: to quicken the conscience by the holiness of God, to feed the mind with the truth of God, to purge the imagination by the beauty of God, to open the heart to the love of God, to devote the will to the purpose of God. True worship is God-centered, not self-centered. Interestingly, Micah's name, like the Old Testament prophet of the same name, means who is like Jehovah, who can compare with Yahweh, the incomparable. But by his attitudes and actions, Micah denies this reality built into his own name. We are called Christians, the Christ ones, but do our attitudes and actions match our name or make a mockery of it? We turn now to the second story, a disobedient Levite. Judges chapter 17, beginning with verse 7. Now there was a young man from Bethlehem in Judah of the family of Judah. He was a Levite and was staying there. The man departed from the city of Bethlehem in Judah to stay wherever he could find a place. Then he came to the mountains of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, as he journeyed. And Micah said to him, "Where do you come from?" So he said to him, "I am a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I am on my way to find a place to stay." Micah said to him, "Dwell with me, and be a father and a priest to me, and I will give you 10 shekels of silver per year, a suit of clothes, and your sustenance." So the Levite went in. What is wrong with this Levite? First of all, he was not eligible for priestly functions. Levites assisted the priests, but they themselves were not priests. In Numbers chapter 16, Korah, an ordinary Levite, was killed by God for wanting to take on priestly functions. Secondly, he should not have been living in Bethlehem. Bethlehem was not one of the 48 cities given to the Levites for them to live in, according to Joshua 21. But here he is, a Levite living in Bethlehem. Evidently, he is not satisfied with God's arrangements for his life. And then we learn that he departed from the city of Bethlehem to stay wherever he could find a place. Kitty Muggeridge wrote, "When self-denial goes out of fashion, self-fulfillment takes its place." This Levite's wanderings bring him to Micah's home, where Micah sees a golden opportunity to upgrade, like a kid going from short pants to Levi's. In Micah's case, he shifts from a homegrown priest, one of his sons, to a genuine Levite. By the way, when we see what the Levite's annual salary is, we realize that the money Micah had stolen from his mother was equal to 110 years of wages, a real fortune. When these two men with no principles meet, they strike an unholy bargain. Micah gets a priest, apparently in an effort to secure his religious future or gain God's blessing. And the Levite gets a job, a set of clothes, food in his stomach, and a roof over his head. Chapter 17, beginning with verse 12. So Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest, and lived in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, "Now I know that the Lord will be good to me, since I have a Levite as priest." All looks well, but only temporarily. The story isn't finished yet. Find out what happens in our next session.